Blog Talk Radio.
It's already done.
It's the Pressure Points Unpacked podcast with host Tyra Little. We're live Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. This show deals with personal and community issues by getting to the root cause and causes on an open and raw level. We're unpacking emotional, spiritual, mental, and physical topics that influence and often control us. Get ready to unload, examine, and process. Let's get unpacked on Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network, Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time.
Hello, and welcome to Pressure Points Unpacked podcast, where I'm your host, Tyra Little, and we're transforming Tuesdays physically, mentally, spiritually, and emotionally. Today we have with us Councilwoman Tamika Isaac Divine. So, Tamika, I want to thank you for taking the time out to come on the show today. I know you're very busy with this election coming up, and I know you have a lot of things that you could be doing and a lot of other places that you could be right now, but I thank you again for taking time out just to have a candid conversation with me. So welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Yeah, we're 21 days away from Election Day, 3 weeks from today, but I certainly am honored to be able to share the mic with you and just have a really honest conversation, because that's what my run and that's what my service has always been about, is about the community. And so shows like you to be able to discuss community issues on a real level is very needed, and I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. So speaking to that, Tamika, how long have you been with City Council?
Yeah, I was elected in 2002, so I have been serving for 19 years as an at-large member of City Council, and at-large means I represent the entire city, just like the mayor.
Wow. That's a long time. That's a 19 years is a very long time, and it comes with a lot of experience. So thank you for your service, definitely.
Well, thank you. I've been honored to represent this city. I mean, the city that I love. Columbia's home for me. This is the city, you know, that I was raised in, and it's the city where my husband and I have intentionally decided to raise our children. And so, you know, I've always been raised as a person very community oriented. I come from a very community driven family, and so I was always taught that you have to get involved to make the changes that you want to see. And so I didn't expect to really serve for 19 years, but when I first ran for office, I was really running to, you know, be a voice for the entire city and certainly bring a different perspective. I'm the first African-American female to be elected to City Council. And at the time, you know, especially us as black women, you know, we run our communities. I mean, we run our churches. We work in the community. You know, we're moms and we're sisters. And so that perspective was missing from City Council. And so when I ran, that's what I ran, is to be a voice for everybody, but bring that lens. And, you know, 19 years later, I feel like I've still been very effective. But now the opportunity has arisen to run for mayor. So I'm now running for mayor to really just elevate the service I've given to this community and help build a collective vision to move this city forward.
That's good stuff, man. Wow. And the first African-American woman for City Council, that's really huge, too. I mean, definitely you have a lot of experience here. so I want to say congratulations to you again. And then also wanted to say congratulations to you for the endorsement of Mr. Clyburn. That's huge. That's a really big endorsement.
Yeah. Thank you. I am so humbled to have Congressman Clyburn endorse me. You know, he doesn't usually get involved in local races, and especially for someone like him who knows all the candidates, you know, for him to weigh in and the way he did means a whole lot. But I think that also speaks to my experience and, my candidacy and being the right person to move this city forward. But particularly when he endorsed also Senator Kay Patterson, Representative Campbell Garvin, and Lonnie Randolph, Dr. Lonnie Randolph, who headed the NAACP for many years, Uncle James Sanders, who is a community activist. And so, although I love having Congressman Clyburn, and that was huge, for me, the bigger part was all of those men standing with me to say, hey, we support her. Because I think a lot of people have made a lot about my candidacy, about me being a woman. And although I do think that women bring a different leadership to the table, and I'm excited and happy and proud that I'm a woman.
Right.
But me, it's not about being a woman. It's about being the best candidate. And to have all of these men with so much experience in serving this community in different capacities to stand with me and say we support her was really huge.
Yes, yes, yes. I saw some pictures from that. And even when I got a chance to stop by the Greenview community, just to see them out there with you also, it said a lot. And it definitely, speaks to the fact that they believe in you. That's really huge. So, a lot of times, Tamika, people really don't get an opportunity to know the individual candidate. And even though you've been in office, you've been in service for 19 years, a lot of times people only see the one side, she's a councilwoman, but they don't get a chance to really know the heart of who Tamika Isaac Devine is, the things that, we hear that you're passionate about the community, and I believe that, because you've been in service for 19 years. But I know you and I had a conversation with dealing with mental health and just some of the things that we're seeing and just around the world with dealing with mental illness. And so I just wanted you to get an opportunity to kind of share your thoughts about, because we have a lot of homelessness here, but just give your input and your take on how can, we better serve that area. Because as we discussed before, a lot of times you see a lot of homeless people, there are some mental issues that's there and they're not really being addressed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. So city council is a part-time job. Certainly I hope that I am elected the next mayor, and so my commitment is that I will be a full-time mayor, because that allows me, having that position allows me to not have my legal practice. But city council is a part-time position, so in my professional job, my regular 9-to-5, I guess you would say, is I am an attorney. But I don't work for a major firm or anything. I have my own law firm. I've been in business, which makes me a small business owner here in the city. I've been in business for actually 20 years. So I stepped out on faith when I was running for office the first time. And I really wanted the autonomy to be able to work for myself so that nobody could say, well, you can't do city council stuff on my time. So I decided to open my own business and partner with a friend from law school. And so I've been in business, a law firm, for 20 years now. And primarily my business is real estate. So I help first-time home buyers when they're buying their houses. But the primary part of my practice is mental health. And so, most people are like, well, what does an attorney do with mental health? And what I do is I get a court appointed by the probate court to represent people who are experiencing mental health challenges, whether it be thoughts of suicide, or bipolar, schizophrenia, or, some kind of MS for diagnosis of some kind of mental health issue. And so what I do is I represent them just to make sure, number one, that the court system takes care of all their rights, but also that they are cared for if they are not if they lack the capacity to make decisions on their own. And so, this is where my professional life and my public service life intersect a lot, because a lot of the clients that I represent are unhoused citizens who are living on the streets. They're dealing with mental health issues. They're dealing with substance abuse issues. And so they are homeless due to a lot of those things. And so, you know, I know you and I had the conversation about the fact that there's so much stigma on mental health, especially in the African-American community. And so when I deal with a lot of my clients, I see that some of it is they don't take meds because they do feel like there's a stigma to having a mental health diagnosis. And so they don't want to take medication because they don't want people to say they're, quote, crazy. And so that issue gets exacerbated because they don't take the meds that can keep them stable. Or I see people who are, you know, they're really lacking the capacity and they have family members who just can't care for them, don't know how to care for them. And so the family members, you know, sometimes meaning knowing what they're doing, sometimes not knowing what they're doing, push them out. And so it really is an issue that I feel like as a community, we have to recognize that our government has underfunded mental health services for years. And now we are seeing the results of that because we're seeing lack of mental health beds, we're seeing lack of mental health providers, and we're seeing a lot of people with mental health issues living on our streets.
Right. And the unfortunate thing that happens with that also is when you have so many of them on the street, you have different issues and people are calling the police for it. And it turns into just one huge problem that really the police department, they're not really equipped to deal with that. So if I'm not mistaken, I think that there was something that you did with city council to kind of address those issues whenever there is a call and the police go out.
Yes, definitely. So one of the things that I know, our officers, they do, you know, the best they can, but they are called out to situations where they are not equipped to deal with it. And when someone is having a mental health crisis, law enforcement should not be the first line of defense. But a lot of people, you know, family members included, don't know who else to call. So they call 911 and law enforcement gets dispatched. And so the best practices that are happening throughout this country, and I'm really lucky because I serve on the board of the National League of Cities, and so I get to talk to my colleagues across the country all the time about what they're doing and what's working in their communities. But what the model is that you have social workers and you have mental health professionals that are embedded in the police department so that when there is that 911 call or there's a, you know, unhoused citizen that, you know, that someone calls and they say they're acting out on the street and law enforcement is called to respond, law enforcement is responding, but they have a mental health professional who is responding with them. So that's the person who can handle the crisis situation. And we have been lucky. We've got a great social worker, Angela, who works for Columbia Police Department. And it's my goal, you know, if elected as mayor, to expand that and have more Angelas within the Columbia Police Department. But Angela has done an amazing job. I mean, just a few weeks ago, she and I spent almost all day down in Five Points trying to help a man who has a mental health issue. I mean, he has a diagnosis going back 40, 50 years, but he's not been cared for, and he was, you know, needing some assistance. And she was with me all day and with the police department trying to make sure. And so instead of arresting him and taking him to jail where he does not belong, we were able to get him to the hospital, get him evaluated, and now get him into some kind of mental health bed that will help him get stabilized. And so that's the kind of thing that we need to have. We need to have innovative treatment so that law enforcement is not called to do things that they're not professionally trained to do.
Right. So she's the only social worker that's on staff for this.
Yes, she is. So we have a two-person unit. It is her, and she is an employee for the Department of Mental Health, but she's embedded in the police department. And then we have an officer who has had additional training and crisis intervention training. We have several of our officers, probably about 60-70% of our officers, hopefully going to get to 100% soon, that have had training and crisis intervention training, but he's had even more hours. And so although he is a trained police officer, he's an expert in crisis intervention. So if a call comes in, just imagine this, Tyra, if someone calls in and they have a, you know, a loved one, or they see somebody who's having a mental health crisis, they will call, but they'll, you know, 911 will ask the right questions. They'll say, okay, this person's having a mental health crisis. This two-person team will be the persons, people that respond, and then they are trained in de-escalation, you know, assessing the problem, making sure that they're getting that person calm down to the point where hopefully we can get them into, you know, some kind of mental health facility to deal with the emergent issue. And so that's, it's only a two-person team right now. That's better than we had 6 months ago. But like I said, as mayor, I really want to expand that team because the best departments across this country have a team that's, you know, 7 or 8 people that can go out. Because just imagine if there's more than one call at a time, if Angela and the officer are at one call, then that other call has to wait. So we do need to expand that team.
Oh, yeah, definitely it needs to happen. But I do applaud the fact that they're is now something in place, and that it's, you know, it's working right now. And, you know, I just pray that that's a division that can actually grow to where you're able to have more licensed professional counselors on that can actually assist in that. So I'm really happy to hear that, that's for sure. Now, I know we're in the month of October, and I know this month there's a lot of things that's represented in the month of October. I mean, we have the domestic violence, and I know I don't know all of them, so I'm not even going to try to begin to name and leave something out. But I know one that's very dear and near to you is with pregnancy and infant loss.
Yes, you got that exactly right. Yeah, October, and I've been so busy with this campaign, I haven't posted it, but I usually post on my social media three ribbons, a pink one for Breast Cancer Awareness Month, a purple one for Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and then a blue and pink one that represents Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month, because most people know the first two. They don't know the third one unless you've been personally affected. I had never heard of this month before I lost a child. My husband and I, we have a son, I say, who was born into heaven. He was stillborn at my 37th and a half a week of pregnancy and went in for a routine, actually it was the last appointment I was having before his scheduled before his due date, and the doctors could not find a heartbeat. And they went in and found that his umbilical cord had wrapped around his neck and suffocated him. Mm-hmm. And so when, you know, we had that loss, I learned of Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month. And just like a lot of things that people deal with, you need that support team. And so, you know, I, you know, joined a support group and learned that there is this month that is dedicated to talk about, you know, or to support parents who have lost a child in pregnancy. And 1 in 4 women actually experience a pregnancy loss. Whether it is a miscarriage or a stillbirth. And so I say now, and I'm a mom of an angel, but what I will say is that, you know, this experience not only, you know, taught me a lot about, you know, me and my husband, a lot about us and our marriage, but it really strengthened my faith. Most people say, gosh, Tamika, you just seem, you know, just so at peace with lots of things. And it's just because, you know, with what, you know, God doesn't give us more than we can handle. And even when we're going through it, it seems like the end of the world. But, you know, through this, I learned so much about, you know, my faith and the strength that God has given us. And so I, in my bio, I say that I have 4 children, 3 here on earth and 1 in heaven. And because I don't want anybody to forget that I had this baby, because I do. But I think the other thing that I want people to recognize is that we never know people's story. And there are so many parents out there that have lost children. And so I learned at the end, you know, that people will say things not even meaning it. Like if you see a couple that don't have children, you're like, oh, when are you going to have kids? I mean, you don't realize that you don't know. They may have been pregnant and lost a child. They may can't have children. And so I think it's important, especially this month, for us to recognize that there are so many parents that don't have children here on this side, but it doesn't make them not a parent. It just means their child is not here with them on earth.
Right. I mean, one thing that you said, I mean, and I always say it myself, as you know, my son was murdered. But you're always going to be, you know, a mother of four, you know, always. So I definitely understand that statement of being a mother of four and three here and one in heaven. So, but the one thing about it is, as you say, God doesn't give us more than we can bear. But the one thing about it that I love is that he will give you the peace that surpasses all your understanding.
Mm-hmm.
You know sometimes how, you know, you're making it through. Well, you do know. You know it's God. But it's, to others, sometimes it just looks like, my gosh, you know, you've dealt with all of this right here. But, yeah, God will keep you. He will definitely keep you. So, Tamika, where did and this is something that, you know, a lot of people may actually, you know a little more about you here. But what high school did you go to? Because I know you said you were actually born and raised from Columbia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I went to Spring Valley High School, class of 1990.
Okay. Well, I won't fault you for going to Spring Valley because, you know, I went to the world's greatest high school, and I'm a Raider, W.J. Keenan, you know.
Yeah, it's so funny when I think about it, like, honestly, and I see it now, but so my dad was a Hornet. He, you know, went to see a Johnson, and so, you know, I spent the weekends with my grandparents. My cousin actually went to Keenan, and I laugh because I think about, like, how things were when I was younger. I mean, it's like you had the high schools, but it was still so many people. I mean, across Columbia, you knew different people from different schools, and not to say it's just nostalgic when you think about the way high schools were now. And I think now people are more divided and you don't interact like you used to. But, yeah, I remember football games and being able – when I went to Spring Valley, it was actually predominantly white, and I played on the band. And it was like our band played, like really boring stuff. And so we'd love to come, and we'd play Eau Claire and Keenan and Johnson, and I would just be in awe of the band. I'm like, oh, man. Look at that.
Right. That's funny because it reminded me of my youngest son when he went to Blythewood. And so he was on a band, and, you know, it was just, it was, you know, the music was different and the things that they did, but the competition. But I will say this, band competition, that's just something that's really different, unique. I mean, I look at the band situation now, and it's like a whole production. I mean, they have, I don't know if they had them then with you, but they had tractor trailers.
Mm-hmm.
That hauls all of their stuff around.
Yeah, all their stuff,
I mean, with the name of the school all on the side of it and everything. So I'm just like, whoa, this is really a big deal now, you know? So, Tamika, I want to ask you, if there's, what is it that you would want the listeners and the constituents of the city of Columbia, just a takeaway about you. What is it that you want to share with the listeners about you?
Well, great question. I guess what I would share with the listeners is that, you know, I have been honored and humbled to serve the city for the last 19 years. And I think what that gives me is it gives me a great perspective on our city. It gives me great experience about the needs of the city and how the city works, and the ability to really be ready on day one to get things done. But what I will also say is that as at-large council person, your role is so much different than the mayor. The mayor is the person who is helps create the vision and then encourages and works with people to actually bring action to that vision. And so as an at-large council person, I've been doing the work. I've been, you know, working in the community, building programs and designing things that help uplift all of our community. But as mayor, I'll have the ability to really promote inclusive and equitable growth within our city and use the mayor's office and the ability with the mayor's office to actually get things done. You know, as a city council person, I mentioned we're part-time and we don't get staff assigned to us. So everything that I've done, whether it be the mayor's walk against domestic violence or the health initiatives that we've done through Let's Move or the initiatives we've done with the young people like financial literacy or Together We Can Read, all of that I've done by myself without the support of having a staff while I'm still raising my own family and working a full-time job as a small business owner. But as mayor, I will be there full-time. I'll have a staff in the mayor's office that can help us implement. And so I really feel like we're at a crossroads within our city. We're going to have at least three new members of council, and we're at that point where we have lots of federal dollars that will be coming into our city. And so when I talk about building a police department that really is about investing resources in the community and not looking at just the criminal aspects of things, but really building our community. When I talk about addressing affordable housing or the racial wealth gap, all of those things, you know, I have the desire and knowledge to get it done with the resources from the federal government and the experience I have as a leader of this city for 19 years, I'll be able to do it. So I'm excited, and I just hope that I can earn everybody's vote in 3 weeks from today, November 2nd, to get out and vote for Tamika Isaac Devine. And you can learn more about me at divineformayor.com.
That's good stuff. Tamika, I definitely wish you the best. We definitely have to get out here and vote. And one of the things that I do talk about on this show is how once we get you all into office, as your constituents, our duties don't just stop there when now you voted in. You know, there's different things that if we have different points of views or we see things, you know, we need to bring it to you guys. I mean, I'm sure that you can get some very good ideas, and I'm sure you have in the past from constituents, but we just don't get you in and just drop you. We have to help you guys when you're in these positions. And so, you know, as you're saying, hey, we need to get out here and vote November 2nd, and, you know, I wish you the best. And once again, I thank you for taking time out to come on the show. And you guys, let's get out here and vote. This is a big election. I mean, and when you look, we have a lot of people, you know, we're here talking with Tamika about the mayor election, but when you look at the fact of how many people we have running for this at-large seat, we really have to do our homework and hone in and make the best decision possible for all of the seats, but we've really got to get out here and vote, you guys. So this is Pressure Points Unpacked, and I'm your host, Tyra Little, with Tamika Isaac Devine. And November 2nd, you guys, we want you to get out here and vote, and just know, hey, early voting has already started, so you're welcome to go down. It's 2020 Harden Street. That is, I did give the right address, didn't I, Tamika?
Nope, 2020 Hampton Street.
2020 Hampton, yeah.
Yep.
Just the corner.
But it's right on the corner of Hampton and Harden. Yep.
Oh, about to send you to the wrong place, but hey, you get down there, you know where it's at. All righty, well, thank you so much, Tamika.
And thank you so much for this amazing platform.
All righty, and hey, we'll look forward to hearing what happens on November 2nd. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's already done. I'm on.